Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. With the primaries kicking off next month and the presidential election just 10 months away, we are discussing election security. Approximately 16 million Americans live in counties and states that use paperless voting machines, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. Most of those people will vote on machines owned by just two companies, Election Systems and Software and Dominion Voting. There are concerns in many states across the country. Advocates, scientists, and many others are calling for hand-marked paper ballots. Experts and even government officials warn that not enough has been done to improve election systems around the country. According to the Washington Post, last month, Congress authorized more than $400 million in federal funding to be distributed to states for election administration, but there is no law specifying how that money must be spent on security measures. Joining us to talk about election security is Dr. Barbara Simons, board chair of Verified Voting. That's a nonprofit that advocates for legislation and regulation that promotes accuracy, integrity, and verifiability of elections. Dr. Simons is the former president of the Association for Computing Machinery. She is the only woman to have received the Distinguished Engineering Alumni Award from the College of Engineering at UC Berkeley, where she earned her PhD in computer science. Dr. Simons is the author of Broken Ballots, Will Your Vote Count? She also co-authored the report that led to the cancellation of the Department of Defense's Internet Voting Project in 2004 because of security concerns. And Dr. Simons supports hand-marked paper ballots. Hi, Dr. Simons. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. It's nice to be back.
Well, it's great to have you. And I know you came in yesterday, and I'm so sorry that we had to cancel the show for the impeachment hearings. But I'm glad
I didn't come in because I was warned ahead of time.
Oh, you were? Okay, good. I'm glad. Thank you. Because I wasn't here either. So thank you so much for, I'm glad it turned, you were able to join us today. So we had you on last September to talk about election security. Before we get in, talk about what's happening this year, just remind listeners about why paperless ballots have created so much concern among election security experts and computer scientists like yourself.
Well, I got involved with this back in the early 2000s when people started producing and purchasing paperless voting machines. The computer scientists, myself included, were rather appalled because we understood that just because you see something on the screen of a computer doesn't mean that that's what gets stored in the internal memory of the machine. It could be changed en route to the memory, and therefore you really couldn't be confident that your vote was accurately recorded, and there was no way to check because there was no paper backup.
And remind us why there was such a rush to embrace these paperless ballots in the first place.
In 2002, the Help America Vote Act was passed, and that provided almost $4 billion, with a B, dollars, to localities to upgrade their voting systems. This was, in many ways, a reaction to what happened in Florida 2000 and then in the subsequent Florida primary. And many election officials felt that, A, this is an opportunity to really upgrade their machines, and B, or the systems, and B, these new computerized voting systems, which had some level of certification from the government, although that's a whole other area, were the way to do it. They would be getting the newest and the best for their voters. So I think a lot of people were really well-intentioned. They went out and bought these systems. And then, you know, these computer scientists came along and said, hey, wait a minute, don't do that. And that didn't make people very happy when we started criticizing, at least some people were very happy when we started criticizing these paperless systems.
There's always an article or a lot of articles during the hackathons that take place when, you know, very savvy people who use computers can hack into these election systems. How easy is that at this point?
Well, it depends on the system. There are some systems, such as the WinVote, which I think is no longer used anywhere in the country, which was rather remarkably easy to hack into. It had Wi-Fi, and this was discovered in Virginia back, I don't remember, I think it was 2014. I'm not sure of the date. But anyway, people were having trouble because they were bringing in their cell phones to the polling place, and they were having trouble voting because the phones were trying to communicate with the machines. And this was really rather appalling when it was discovered by the Virginia security experts who subsequently looked at the machines. So that's an example of a very easy to hack into system. Another one that was very easy to hack into is the paperless Diebold voting machines that were used in Georgia through 2018. We knew how to hack into them if you could gain access to the machine since 2006. And prior to the 2018 midterm, Alex Halderman, who's a computer security expert at the University of Michigan, showed how to hack into them remotely, even though they're paperless and not connected to the Internet.
Since we've had so many examples of this, there was a great piece in the New York Review of Books, I believe it was back in December, by Jennifer Cohn, who is an advocate to go back to paper systems. And she writes, so many analysts have cautioned against acquiring new ballot marking machines for universal use, but election officials in at least 250 jurisdictions across the country have ignored their advice. Georgia, South Carolina, and Delaware have already chosen these systems for statewide use in 2020. At least one or more counties in Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Ohio, Tennessee, West Virginia, Texas, the list goes on and on and on, are using this system. So what explains this?
Well, I mean, for one thing, we need some sort of voting system for voters with disabilities to be able to vote independently. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the law. And it's also the right thing to do. These ballot marking devices do facilitate independent voting by voters, for example, with vision impairments and mobility problems. So there's a need to get something for voters with disabilities. And voters with disabilities, not surprisingly, don't want to feel that, well, first of all, that they are voting on inferior systems, but secondly, that their votes can be distinguished from other people's votes. So if everybody does hand-marked paper ballots except a handful of voters with disabilities who vote on a BMD, which produces a different type of ballot, then there's the threat to the secret ballot. So there's been pressure on election officials and jurisdictions to purchase BMDs for all. Now, I personally, in verified voting, advocate for hand-marked paper ballots as the major way for people to vote. And these ballot marking devices, the use of them should be minimized. But another point which doesn't get discussed very much is that there is at least one system out there which produces a voted ballot that looks like a hand-marked paper ballot. It's a ballot marking device. And my feeling is that this is the way to go if you can get such systems. So then when a voter with disabilities votes on this type of machine, his or her vote, her ballot isn't easily distinguished from ballots that are voted on by voters who are using hand-marked paper ballots.
Yesterday, the Gothamist, a New York-based publication, had a piece about the New York State Board of Elections testing a machine called the Express Vote XL from the company Election Software and Systems. And this is a BMD. So basically, this machine uses touchscreen technology and then marks the ballot for the voter. Is that right?
Well, the XL has a particularly bad feature, which is, there are several things. First of all, I believe it produces a summary ballot that just lists voter selections. And that can be difficult for a voter to verify. In fact, there have been some results that show that voters tend not to verify their ballots when they're produced by these machines, especially unless there's some special efforts being made to encourage them to do so. But what's particularly egregious about the XL is that after the ballot is voted and marked, it gets sucked back into the machine and it goes back under the printer. And this would allow the printer to make additional marks on the ballot.
Why do the companies come up with these kinds of systems? That doesn't really make sense.
Well, they don't ask us. I can see the reason for sucking it back into the machine. The motivation for that probably was that if a voter has mobility problems, then he or she doesn't have to actually hold the ballot. Now, I don't think this is sufficient motivation for doing it the way they did. I mean, I think it's a really bad design. But look, they produced these paperless DREs back in the early 2000s. I'm sorry, direct recording electronics, that's what they're called.
Wow.
And they, you know, why did they produce those? They didn't ask us about those either.
You know, Barbara, when you look back to the 2000 election, I can't believe that was almost 20 years ago now. And you look at where we're going, we're heading this election. I mean, it's such an important election. As a longtime scientist, how have your feelings around election security changed over the past 20 years based on what we what we see with these machines?
Well, when I first started, and I don't think I was unique, I had the sense that we would go and explain to people what the vulnerabilities of these machines are, and they'd say, oh, okay, I get that. Let's not use those. Let's use something better. And somehow that's not what happened. I'd never imagined that I'd be doing this work for almost 2 decades. I mean, that's pretty appalling.
Wow. 2 decades. And so how... Like, oh, this is a very basic question. How, when you think about election security for 2020, what goes through your mind? Are you very, very concerned? Are you a little concerned?
Well, I'm very concerned. I mean, the intelligence community has been warning us for quite some time about attacks from nation states, especially Russia, but Iran, North Korea, China. I mean, there are many countries that have the ability to attack our election. And some of these attacks can be very subtle. This is, and I'm talking about the technology. This is not addressing the whole fake news and social media stuff. That's another factor. But we still use vulnerable voting systems in many parts of the country, and even where we have the capacity to check on the results, we don't do it sufficiently.
Wow.
In most cases.
Today we are speaking with Dr. Barbara Simons, Board Chair of Verified Voting, a nonprofit that advocates for legislation and regulation that promotes accuracy, integrity, and verifiability of elections. If you have any questions for Dr. Simons about election security, if you'd like to talk about how you vote in your area, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. In the meantime, if you have any questions about electronic voting, we'd love to hear from you. There is a great story that I hope you can read by Jennifer Cohn. It's in the New York Review of Books. It's called How New Voting Machines Could Hack Our Democracy. And I remember 2000, like all of you, and you just have to wonder, why has it taken so long to fix these problems? This year, for the 2020 election, 16 million Americans will be using paperless voting machines. And there's so many problems. I'll just read from a piece in The Hill. Experts warn Georgia's new electronic voting machines are vulnerable to potential intrusions. They're warning that Georgia's new voting machines are at risk of intrusions and malfunctions as the state grapples with election security issues. Georgia Institute of Technology computing professor Richard DeMillo told the Washington Post that bystanders could see the machine screens during his visit to polling places in the north of Atlanta. Some counties are experiencing programming issues that delayed voter check-ins, while others noted machine shutdowns. And so this is just a major, major problem. I mean, Stacey Abrams has started an organization to focus on this. And during the Super Bowl last year, they actually played a commercial saying we need a paper machine, or not paper machines, but we need paper ballots. And it's very expensive to buy a commercial during the Super Bowl, but that is how pressing this issue is. So if you have any questions about election security, give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. So many election security experts, including our guest today, Dr. Barbara Simons, is calling for hand-marked paper ballots. So what do you want to know about election security? So let's just talk about what we can expect this time around. According to the Brennan Center for Justice, 16 million Americans will be using paperless voting machines. How varied are those machines?
I'm not sure exactly how Brennan defined paperless, because if you really want to talk about paperless voting systems as opposed to machines, you have to include internet voting as well. Generally speaking, most of these paperless voting machines are old. They've been around for a while. Many of them are falling apart, and they're not being manufactured. There are a couple of cases where new paperless systems have been purchased, which I found rather shocking, given how much we know about the vulnerabilities of these systems. But by and large, the move has been to some form of paper ballots, either hand-marked paper ballots or ballot-marking devices. And despite all of the complaints about ballot-marking devices, I think even the most vigorous critic would agree that they are preferable to paperless voting machines.
And what has changed in terms of ensuring that more people across the country use hand-marked paper ballots? How quickly has that changed?
Well, as I say, the move has been to paper ballots, voter-marked paper ballots, which includes both types of systems, hand-marked and ballot-marked, machine-marked. Until recently, I guess the past couple of years, there hasn't been a widespread push to sell these ballot marking devices, but that's something that has happened, as you mentioned in your comments. These ballot marking devices are much more expensive than hand-marked paper ballot systems, and they also could conceivably create long lines if they break down, if there aren't sufficient numbers of them, and so on, just as was the case with the direct recording electronic machines, where you had to vote on the machine and the information was stored in the memory of the machine. So in this case, with the ballot marking devices, the information is printed out on a piece of paper. So that's definitely an improvement. Huh. But you still have to vote on the machine, and if the machine goes down or if there aren't enough of them, you can have long lines and you can have voters disenfranchised. Plus, they are far more expensive than hand-marked paper ballot systems. And people have to keep in mind that that under the law and under the notion, any notion of fairness, there has to be some kind of voting system that can be used at the polls by voters with disabilities that would allow them to vote independently.
There's a new study from researchers at the University of Michigan, and they conducted a mock election and found that 40% of the voters did not review their ballots before they handed them over to be scanned. They also found that few voters reported errors to poll workers. And they conducted this using BMDs. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I'm familiar with that study, and it confirms some of what people were had already been saying with less formal studies. They did also find, however, that in the cases where the voters brought in a cheat sheet, so like in California, I always fill out we get these sample ballots mailed to us, and I always fill one out and take it with me to the polls because our ballots are so crazy long I can't remember everything I wanted to vote for. And if you have that kind of situation where voters bring along, say, a sample ballot or a list of the candidates they want to vote for, and then are told before they put the ballot in the scanner to check that the ballot accurately reflects their choices, they are far more likely to check. Now, whether enough of them check, I think, is an open question. Whether other ways of encouraging voters to check might work is also, I think, an open question. So this is actually a relatively new area that people are looking at. I think it's fair to put the burden of proof on the vendors to show that the ballots do get checked.
Right.
But there were some interesting results out of it. It wasn't entirely negative coming out of this. I mean, there do seem to be some approaches that definitely have more of an impact in encouraging voters to check their ballots.
What else struck you about that study? What was encouraging?
Well, as I say, if voters bring along a cheat sheet and are told before they scan their ballots, after it's printed out by the ballot marking device, before it's put into the scanner to be tabulated, if they are alerted to the fact that they should check their ballots, a fairly large percentage of them do check. So it seems that for example, there are things that were shown not to work. So posting something at the polling place telling people to check their ballots doesn't seem to have an impact, didn't seem to have an impact in that study. So they were looking at different techniques for encouraging voters to check their ballots. And I think this is an area that deserves more, needs more attention. I mean, whether or not one likes ballot marking devices and whether or not one wants ballot marking devices for everybody at the polling place, which, as I said, is not my first choice. There are places like all of Georgia which have them. So given that people are voting on these systems, the next question is, what can we do to try to make their votes as secure as possible and as likely to be counted correctly as possible? So we can't ignore these systems, whether we like them or not, because they're out there.
Right. Well, let's talk about what's happening in Georgia. Last year, U.S. District Judge Amy Totenberg ruled that paperless ballots can no longer be used in Georgia, and the state is now required to use paper ballots going forward in 2020. This was a very long ruling, 153 pages. The judge said that the voting machines were outdated. But according to the Washington Post, Georgia is rolling out 30,000 new touchscreen machines that produce paper records in every polling place for the primary in March. And there are some major concerns with these machines. They're ballot marking devices. What are your thoughts on what's going on in Georgia?
Well, as I said, I would have preferred if Georgia had taken another path and purchased primarily hand-marked paper ballots with ballot marking devices as needed for voters with disabilities. And in fact, again, I would have preferred that those ballot marking devices produce full ballots that are very difficult to distinguish from hand-marked paper ballots. But that's not what they did. I think that whenever a jurisdiction switches to a new voting technology for a major election, that's going to be a problem. Ideally, you want to bring it in and start using it on relatively minor elections to iron out the kinks. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have problems in the primary.
Dr. Simons, have you done much research into the companies that make these machines? According to reports, the majority of people who will vote on machines, these machines are owned by just two companies, Election Systems and Software and Dominion Voting.
I think the main thing is, as a colleague of mine likes to say, if we have the right policies and procedures in place, it doesn't matter if the devil himself makes the machine. But what you need is you need paper ballots that the voter has verified, and that could include ballot marking devices, ballots that are produced by ballot marking devices, but the voter has to check it. And you need strong chain of custody of those paper ballots, which is something that doesn't get talked about very much. But, I mean, it doesn't matter if you've got hand-marked paper ballots for everybody. If someone can get in there and mess with the ballots and, you know, take some out and put some in, that's going to change that could change the results of the election. So you need strong chain of custody, and then finally you need to check on the computers that tabulate those ballots. So almost everywhere in this country, we use scanners to tabulate paper ballots, and those scanners are computers, and those scanners can be hacked or they can have software bugs. So we really need to check on them, and the best way of doing that is if you can do it statewide, having a risk-limiting audit. So a risk-limiting audit just uses statistics with very high, depending on how much confidence you want to have in the results, validate that either the declared result is correct or it will lead to a total manual recount and that will find the correct result. But you need the paper ballots and you need the strong chain of custody in order to do that. So the risk-limiting audit is really a tabulation audit. It checks on the scanner that counts the ballots.
Today we're speaking with Dr. Barbara Simons, board chair of Verified Voting, a nonprofit that advocates for legislation and regulation that promotes accuracy, integrity, and verifiability of elections. Dr. Simons supports hand-marked paper ballots. Coming up after a break, we will be joined by Cami Foote. Cami is a California County Clerk Recorder for the Inyo County elections. We will talk about what's happening in California. We will also be giving you very important information if you live in California about the upcoming primary on March 3rd. For the first time ever, we actually matter in the primary. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. 8255 toll free. You can also send an email to yourcall@klw.org. You may leave a comment at the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, and you can also tweet us at yourcallradio. Decrypting the Decryption Dilemma will be the subject of 1A at 11 o'clock, one half hour from now, here on 91.7 KALW.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are talking about election security. And if you have any questions about what will happen in the presidential election, also the primary is really important, and that's just right around the corner. We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Dr. Barbara Simons is board chair of Verified Voting, who supports hand-marked paper ballots. And now I would like to welcome Cammie Foote to the show. Cammie is a California County Clerk recorder for the Inyo County elections. Hi, Cammie. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. According to reports, California has almost 20 million registered voters, which is about 79% of total eligible voters. That's great news. Hopefully we can bring that up a little bit. But that's a lot of voters. So talk about what's happening in California. How do most people in California vote?
Well, increasingly, people in California are voting by mail, and particularly in this election because we have a reform that has been being implemented by over half of voters in the state, or actually it's not being implemented by the voters, but the voters will be in counties that are having what are called vote centers. So half of the voters are moving from a polling place scenario to actually a vote center, which will be open for 11 days and have a lot of different options for voters during those 11 days.
What is the best website for people to visit to find out if anything has changed?
Probably their local registrar of voters or local elections office, but they can always visit the California Secretary of State's office website, which has a lot of information specific to each of our counties.
And can you talk about the security and accuracy of voting by mail now that that is becoming so popular in California? And it's also how everyone in Oregon votes.
I believe most of the people in Colorado are voting by mail as well. And I have to look at the statistics. I know over 50% of Californians are voting by mail. In Inyo County, we have over 70% of voters who choose to vote by mail. And so there are some additional concerns that come with that type of voting. Yes, they are hand-marked paper ballots, but voters don't, if they make a mistake on those ballots or they mark more choices than there are available, which is called an overvote, we can have some other issues, as well as voters who forget to sign their vote-by-mail envelope or signatures that don't compare with when they registered to vote perhaps 20 years ago. So there are different vulnerabilities that come with the vote-by-mail system, and we are addressing those through a lot of recent reforms to allow for voters to correct mistakes.
Dr. Simons, what are your thoughts on voting by mail?
Well, I agree with Cammie that that voters don't get the opportunity to check their ballots the way they would if they voted in the polling place and put them through a scanner there. There are also concerns about vote buying and voter coercion with vote by mail. In fact, with any kind of remote voting, not just vote by mail.
Have you seen any problems in states like Oregon where all voters vote by mail?
What do you mean problems?
Well, big problems. Like, since they've been doing it for a while now, has anything come up?
Well, I mean, a lot of the people there seem to like it. Mm-hmm. My guess is that if there is some, is any kind of voter coercion, you're not going to really hear about it because people in that situation are not very likely to report it. I mean, I did hear of one case, for example, when I gave a talk in Oregon, I think it was Oregon a few years ago, when a woman said that her father had Alzheimer's and was in a nursing home, and his vote was cast, and she was sure he didn't cast it.
Oh, wow. Wow. Do you think this is a good trend, Dr. Simons, that so many people in California are now voting by mail?
I personally prefer polling place voting. Mm-hmm. I really do. Because it provides all the protections that one really wants, the security, the privacy, mm-hmm. That's my preference.
What about, this is what I did last time because I became a vote-by-mail voter, but I took the ballot to my polling place.
Mm-hmm.
Is that any different,
right,
or?
Well, I mean, Candy can talk to this more than I can, but you have to be careful if you are vote-by-mail and you decide to go to the polling place that you do take the ballot because otherwise you'll be forced to vote provisionally.
Right.
But I'm sure she's had more experience with this than I have.
And now that you brought that up, thank you. There are in this area of reforms a new reform that allows voters who go into a polling place that have previously been issued a vote-by-mail ballot a mechanism to be able to vote a regular ballot if they can confirm that their vote-by-mail ballot was not already cast at the elections office. That was new in 2018. It reduced our provisionals here in Inyo County by at least half, which is great for the voter, for the poll worker, and as well as election administration, making sure that those votes are tallied on election night instead of later on through the provisional balloting process.
And Cami, we are voting in the primary on March 3rd here in California. It's the first time that we actually matter. We're going to be part of that big Super Tuesday wave. Can you let listeners know, for those who want to vote for a Democrat for president, how they can ensure that they can vote for a Democrat?
The first thing all voters should be doing is checking their voter status. They can do that online through the California Secretary of State's office and through many of our local websites. And they want to make sure that they have updated all of their information and that their party preference is correct. That's the number one thing that all voters in California should be doing. And if anything is not accurate, if they update it now, they can ensure that they get the right ballot in the right time period for them. So, for instance, if they're a vote-by-mail voter, they want to do that right away because ballots are going out already on February 3rd. The next is if they're a no-party preference voter, they have to communicate to the elections office if they vote by mail which ballot they prefer. We cannot make assumptions based on percentages. So California allows a process where if you're not registered with the party, which is increasingly growing in the state, you can choose to cross over without affiliating with the parties. The parties decide the parties themselves decide whether voters can participate in their primary if they don't have a preference, which the Democratic Party does allow. However, numbers coming back in, even in Inyo County, I sent a direct mailing to all my voters that are no party preference. I emailed all my voters directly that are no party preference. The Secretary of State has done outreach to these voters, and we still only have about 20% of those voters who are communicating which ballot they want with our office. And I believe that those numbers are consistent across the state. We just need to get more information in front of voters so that they can get the ballot of their choice.
And again, if you're no party preference, how can you request a crossover ballot?
You can request it through the mail by returning the direct mailing that the elections office sent to you. You can request it electronically. Some websites, local elections, you can actually do it through an electronic mechanism on the website, but certainly through email. You can also call your elections office and request it verbally over the phone after they've verified that you are the voter. So we're trying to make it as easy as possible for voters to communicate their choice with us, but if they do vote by mail and they have no party preference, they have to make that connection with us in order to get the ballot.
I'm afraid a lot of people are going to be surprised that they can't, if they want to vote for a Democrat, that they can't if they don't request that crossover ballot. If you're a Green Party member, you cannot request a crossover ballot because that primary is closed. So if you're a Green and you want to vote for a Democrat, you won't be able to. You have to actually change your party preference, right?
That is correct. You would either have to change it to the Democratic preference or no party preference and request a crossover ballot. The good news is the big difference between 2016 and 2020 in the primary is that we now have conditional voter registration, and voters should be aware of this option. It allows them to register and vote in the last 14 days conditionally, and as long as that voter has not previously cast a ballot, that vote will count, where with the provisional process, they could not update their voter registration in those last 14 days to the other party preference. So this is a huge step in the right direction in the state of California, big difference between 2016 and 2020 that voters should be aware of.
Wow, that's a huge difference. So 14 days before the March 3rd election, and you can still change your party preference?
You have to do it conditionally. So in vote center counties in the last 11 days leading up to the election, any voter can go into a vote center and update their party preference if they miss the traditional deadline,
okay,
which is February 18th. So prior to February 18th, any voter can go and re-register online or buy a paper voter registration card. After February 18th, so from February 19th up through March 3rd, if they want to update their party preference, they have to communicate with the elections office to do that. And then on election day itself, all across the state, they can do that at any polling place or any vote center.
Wow. Okay. This is really important information to get out. I'm hoping that we're going to air some PSAs. So again, if you want to vote for a Democrat, no party preference, you have to request a crossover ballot or even just change your registration. If you're a Green Party member, you cannot vote in the Democratic primary. You have to change your party preference. And I'm not spending too much time talking about the Republican race because it's not contested for president, but what information can you give us about that race?
Actually, there are 7 candidates running for the Republican nomination in California. So there, even though it's not nationally covered, there are more than one choice on the ballot for the Republican. And those no party preference voters, if they want to vote in the Republican Party primary, they have to affiliate with the Republican Party in order to do that. So they would have to re-register to vote.
Okay. There's 7 running. I did not know that.
There's actually 52 candidates running for the presidential nomination in California.
Oh, wow. And 7 Republicans.
Yes, as well as 20 with the Democratic preference.
Okay, so again, on the Republican side, you have to be a Republican if you want to vote for the Republican candidate. And on the Democratic side, if you're no party preference, you have to request a crossover ballot. If you're Green, you cannot vote for a Democrat. You have to be a Dem or no party preference and request crossover. But it might make more sense, just to get rid of all the confusion, to just be a Dem and then go back to being a Green if you'd like to. So please get that information out to friends, colleagues, family, because for the first time ever, California actually matters in the primary on Super Tuesday, March 3rd. Actually, Bill just wrote me and said, correction, this is not the first time that California will matter. In 2008, we had a split primary. The presidential primary was on February 5th, 2008. A second primary for other offices and ballot measures was in early June. Is that right?
That is correct. That was the first time that President Obama stood for election for President of the United States. That was conducted in February of 2008, and I believe California actually went to a different nominee, our popular vote.
Huh. Okay. Well, thank you for that correction, Bill. But anyway, this March 3rd is really important because California does have a voice in the primary. And if you have any questions about this or any overall questions about election security, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Cami Foote is California County Clerk, Recorder for the Inyo County Elections, and Dr. Barbara Simons is Board Chair of Verified Voting. She supports hand-marked paper ballots. We have an email from Wendy who says, after the 2016 California Democratic primary, a friend posted on Facebook a video showing a voter voting for Bernie on a touchscreen voting machine and the vote changing to Hillary. A skeptical sort who remembers that we voted against touchscreen voting machines, I contacted the California Secretary of State and asked if we had touchscreen voting machines. I was told they were only used in specific instances where a person's disability made it possible for them to cast their vote that way, but there had been no reports of malfunctions. Has something changed that we're now getting touchscreen voting machines? If so, why? How will we prevent millions of people from believing doctored videos put out there to divide us? Cami, do you want to take that first?
Well, the misinformation question is, I think, something we're all grappling with, and I don't have an easy answer on how to combat misinformation other than to suggest to voters that they go to trusted sources. Verified voting is one of them. Your elections offices, your Secretary of State's offices are going to be putting forward information that voters should be able to rely on. As far as the prevalence of touchscreen voting machines and when they're used, the difficulty with election administration is we don't qualify voters or we don't make them go through some kind of test to use the assistive technology. If they tell us and they tell the poll workers that they would like to use it or they need to use it, they're able to. And so in some counties, there are more voters who choose to use the assistive technology than others. So in Inyo County, for instance, they only have a handful of voters who choose to use them, even though they're federally mandated to be at every single polling place. As we move towards vote centers and e-poll books, that's a whole other story that's more, it's reliant on technology, reliant on energy, and those kinds of things I think people need to be paying attention to ensure that we don't have power outages during those 11 days of voting on vote centers, and to make sure that we have the appropriate technical acumen at those sites, so that if there are problems with the e-poll books or if there are problems with the voting machines, that we have technicians available that can get those corrected. As you know, a lot of our poll workers have been doing it for a long time. Some of them may not have grown up with computers or not familiar with computers, and so we need to make sure that we have people at the polling place that can address problems as they arise.
Last August, voters said that touchscreen machines switched their votes in 9 Mississippi counties. This got a lot of attention. And then I'm reading the Journal and Courier from November 2019. Faulty machines blamed for switching votes in second consecutive Greater Lafayette election. What are your thoughts about this, Dr. Simons, of people saying that they hit a candidate on a screen and the other candidate pops up?
Well, one of the things that we've known for a long time is that many of these touchscreen machines, especially the old ones, go out of calibration fairly easily. So the machine might go out of calibration, you touch one place and it shows another, or it shows another result. The problem with that, and I know that people, the voters will tend to think that they're being cheated, that their vote's being cast for different candidate. In fact, I think you really don't know. You really don't know who the vote was cast for, especially in the case of paperless voting systems. So, frankly, if I were going to steal an election, I wouldn't be so obvious. You know, I would make the change in the memory as opposed to on the screen. So the fact that the screen shows something different, it's possible that if I touch A and B lights up, that my vote gets cast for B, or it might get cast for A. It's just really hard to know. So I think it's a calibration issue. It's it's most unfortunate that this type of technology was used for these early machines, but because it does create confusion and doubt in people's minds, and of course the machines need to be, especially I think as they get older, they need to be calibrated more frequently. I'd just like to add a couple of other things. One thing about these using these assistive device voting system, these voting systems that are used for people with disabilities, in many cases, if there's only a very small number of voters who need to use those machines, like we're talking about 2 or 3 or even just 1, poll workers will be encouraged to ask a few other voters to use them as well because of the secret ballot issue, because you don't want to make it totally obvious how a particular voter has voted just because she has to use one of these touchscreen devices. And one other thing I just wanted to say is I am not speaking officially for verified voting. I mean, I'm the board chair, but I don't speak for verified voting. So when I express opinions about things, in many cases, they're my opinions. They may or may not be considered verified voting, although they tend to be, but they may not be.
All right. Thank you for that. I wanted to ask you also about apps. This is getting a lot of attention. In fact, NPR reported on this just 2 days ago. Despite election security fears, Iowa caucuses will use a new smartphone app. Iowa's Democratic Party plans to use an internet-connected smartphone app to help calculate and transmit results during the caucuses next month. Party leaders say they decided to opt for this strategy, fully aware of 3 years' worth of warnings about attacks on the presidential election. Dr. Simons, why are they doing this? What are your thoughts?
Well, I wouldn't have recommended that they do it. I mean, I think it's a bad idea. The good news is they're not actually voting on their cell phones. I mean, that was what they originally wanted to allow people to do. And fortunately, the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, told them no. And by the way, I think Nevada was going to do that too. And Alaska was going to allow internet voting using blockchain voting, and that also was stopped. But they're just sending in the results. The issue there, and I think the article speaks quite clearly to it, is if that gets hacked and the initial results that are sent in turn out not to be correct, and then they have to go and correct them. That could create a lot of suspicion about what happened with the results, that the person who was originally declared the winner and then said, no, this other person won, that person, the originally declared winner's supporters, would cry foul. And, it's not healthy for our democracy.
Right. And given just all of these security problems, are you hearing from any election officials that would like to allow people to vote on apps?
Like on cell phones?
Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a concern. Well, it's not just election officials. It's often there's certain activists who believe that basically smartphone voting or internet voting will increase voter participation. And we really have very little evidence that supports that. There was a study done a few years ago for the British Columbian Parliament that was considering internet voting for the province. And much to their surprise, they discovered that internet voting, A, did not increase voter participation, and B, did not increase participation by young people, which was not what they were expecting. Instead, they learned that internet voting that the people who voted over the internet were going to vote anyway. Now, this admittedly was a few years ago before the widespread use of smartphones, but my guess is it wouldn't be all that different. And even if it were, smartphone voting is internet voting. It's insecure.
Dr. Barbara Simons is board chair of Verified Voting, and we're joined by Cami Foote, California County Clerk Recorder for the Inyo County Elections. And Dr. Simons, what about Bitcoin and blockchain? Can you explain how this would even work? Many in the Bitcoin and blockchain world believe voting technology advancements can and will provide a new method of voting that's more secure, easier, and will allow more people to perform their basic civic duty. What are your thoughts on this?
Well, blockchain voting, basically, Bitcoin is a platform of blockchains, and blockchains are a data structure. And the consensus is, at least among computer security experts who I know, that blockchains do not deal with the security issues of elections. And in fact, if I can bring it up, the National Academy of Science said, and this is in a study done in 2018, in the particular case of internet voting, blockchain methods do not redress the security issues associated with internet voting, and that's a direct quote from their study. So blockchains are the latest buzzword, and people are blockchain this and blockchain that, and for some things, blockchains are very useful, and there are some voting-related issues where blockchains might be beneficial. But the bottom line is that blockchain voting is internet voting, and blockchains in and of themselves do not correct the security issues of internet voting.
We have a phone call from Greg in Palo Alto. We don't have time to take your call, Greg, but he wants to know, how can voters trust how their votes get cast? There is so much distrust among voters. Cami, will you take that first?
Absolutely. I would say the first thing is that they can volunteer to be a poll worker. We're always looking for people to help with the electoral process, and then they can see firsthand the mechanisms and the extent that we go through to protect their vote. So if anyone's interested, they can do that. We also have a formalized election observer panel in every single county where someone can contact their local registrar's office and sign up to be an observer so they can go in and watch the process. The entire process of vote counting, at least in Inyo County, is completely transparent and open for public view. And I encourage people that have these kinds of doubts and concerns, rather than reading information that may be inaccurate online, come in to your elections office, observe, be a part of the process, sign up, be a poll worker, and then you can be a part of that election integrity protection.
And what would you add, Dr. Simons?
Well, I certainly support what Cami just said. And by the way, I encourage people, especially younger people, to volunteer as poll workers. It's quite an eye opener. It's a lot of work. Having done it, I can attest to the fact that it's a very, very long day, but it's definitely worth doing. And the other thing is that almost all election officials really want to get it right. They really want the voters' votes to be cast correctly and counted correctly. So this is not an adversarial situation, especially in California. Everybody I know in California is working to try to make elections as easy as possible for voters to participate in and as accurate as possible.
All right. Well, thank you for that important question, Greg. We are almost out of time. I just want to repeat one more time for people in California. If you're going to vote in the March primary and you want to vote for a Democrat, if you are a no-party preference voter, you have to request a crossover ballot. So you can go online and just find out how you're, you know, what party you're registered with first. If you're a Green Party member and you want to vote for a Democrat, the Green Party is closed, and so you have to become a Democrat or no party preference. If you're a Republican and you want to vote for a Democrat, the same thing applies. And then if you want to vote for a Republican, you have to be a Republican. Is there anything else to add there, Cammie? I mean, there's a lot of information, but it's just so important to get the word out.
I would just really encourage people to participate in primaries. We always have a lower voter turnout in a primary compared to a general, but a lot of the local races are decided at the primary, and the top two vote-getters of all of your voter-nominated offices, these are your congressional, your state senate and assembly, the top two are the ones that move on to November. So you're really disenfranchising yourself if you don't participate in the primary election. So I would just encourage people, register early, make sure that you're checking your voter registration status to ensure that you're registered with the party preference of your choice and at the correct address, and participate. Our democracy works best when we have a broad range of people participating so that all of our interests are represented.
Cammie Foote is California County Clerk Recorder for the Inyo County elections. Cammie, thanks for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Barbara Simons is Board Chair of Verified Voting, a nonprofit that advocates for legislation that promotes accuracy and integrity of elections. Dr. Simons supports hand-marked paper ballots. Dr. Simons, thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Rose.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. You can find more information about voting, about the primary election security at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance, our studio engineer. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.